Welcome to the Fuller Monday Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 16th of March, recording at 7:55 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first let's have a quick review of the week. Stock markets tested their lows of March 5th. And generally held. Actually, some of the Asian markets did really quite well, did better than that, and saw some reasonable rallies, pushing above, in some instances, above the their reaction highs that we'd seen the week before. Now, in other action, government bonds were generally steady, although giving up a little bit of their gains yesterday. That's government bond prices, long-dated government bond prices. The U.S. dollar took a hit, particularly today. In here, we saw the U.S. dollar index, for example, drop down to 83.03. It's currently trading at 83.22, so it broke down out of a sideways trading range, and the euro is currently 133.12 after 133.40. So say stronger action here. We saw the dollar down against the yen, but this was not so much yen strength as would be unsettling to a number of leveraged traders, as it was more a case of dollar weakness. Okay, and precious metals were generally firm in here today. Some good gains. Gold, as I speak, is at 652.30, up 570, so that's back above that psychological 650 level. And silver currently at 13.21 and a half. That's the May contract, as I speak. These gains were paired a little bit when oil weakened once again. And oil has been soft this week, although it's off its lows today. But it's down 48 at 57.07. The Brent, as I've mentioned before, is stronger, but got about a $3 premium. Not having the same, or not encountering the same storage scarcity, I think we can say. Industrial metals had a very, very good week, and they were all up today except for zinc, which was down a little bit. So really strong performances in here, led by the nickel market, which has been strong for months. And the interesting development, though, this week in that metal section has been a surge in copper. And it's up again today, currently at 301.40 on the May contract. I wish I'd bought more. I have some, but I didn't have enough, but there may well be a pullback. There will be a pullback, obviously, at some stage. Okay. Elsewhere, grains and beans gave up a little bit of ground. The grains and beans that were steadier in here today. Cotton had given up some ground in one sharp sell-off day this week, but a little bit firmer in here today. And cocoa sort of quietly steady, although slightly down today. Okay, so where are we and what is going on here? Well, as far as global stock markets are concerned, this looks very much like the bigger reaction or correction. And I think correction is really the appropriate word in here, because we are seeing a number of markets experience reactions, or they look capable of experiencing reactions on the scale of what we saw last May and June, although they're not going to be as fast, in my view, in terms of the downside action as it was back then when we had central banks leaning on the markets. But the important point here is that I don't see any evidence that the downward correction has completed itself yet, and the possible exception to that would be the action of some of the Asian markets. Now, I've talked more about those today in comment of the day, so you'll be able to see that. But I would be very surprised if they actually any of those Asian markets actually broke up to new high ground anytime soon. But when we do get new highs, again, I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see Asian markets among the majors leading that way up. There's bound to be some thinly traded market somewhere in Europe or South America that will perhaps have the lead. But the Asian markets are showing some of the best relative strength in here right now. So I maintain that this is the mean reversion correction that I worried about for some weeks before China actually triggered the whole thing on the 27th of February, coming before the seasonally bearish period. I think the significance of that, though, is that the Asian markets are in the pole position in terms of leading moves, both on the upside and also leading on the downside. Now, that's not unusual in the sense that what leads first, beg your pardon, what leads tends to lead in both directions. In other words, so if you get a sector of the markets that leads on the upside, it'll also lead on the corrective phases as well. And we saw that with a number of Asian markets. Now, we've had Asia's leadership before, not least when Japan was all the rage back in the 1980s. And all you had to do was look at what was going on in Japan, and you could expect that to be repeated elsewhere, to usually to a lesser degree, both in terms of the direction of the overall stock market indices, but also in terms of sector rotation. And Asia's in that pole position now, and has been there for a while. Now, in terms of the additional correction, I have already said that I don't expect it to be as rapid as it was back in May and June. And I mentioned, again, central banks leaned on markets back then. But also, another factor contributing to that is that the Asian markets, which I generally think of as being high beta, certainly have the beta on the upside, but they're not showing as much on the downside. And I think that reflects the common sense view that Asia really is the growth engine now for the global economy. And it also indicates that valuations are really reasonably competitive in most of the Asian markets. And it also shows that investors generally are less nervous about the region than they have been sometimes in the past. The same thing applies to India in here, because India fell for 5 weeks back in 2006, and it dropped about 30% on that move. Now, India peaked out a little bit before some of the other markets, again, Asia leading. And over the last 5 weeks, India has fallen 16%. So certainly a slower rate of descent there, although it's still a significant move, and India does remain a high beta market. But it hasn't been as emotional on the downside as it was back in 2006. So what are we going to get? Well, I think it'll be a combination of sideways to lower ranging for most of these markets. If there are any standouts in terms of relative performance, I think they will be within Asia during that period. And this is likely to go on for at least a number of weeks and possibly several months. Then I think we'll get the bull move reasserting itself once again. I'm reasonably relaxed about contagion coming from the USA. And yes, people are in a lather over the subprime business, but we have to view this with some perspective. You can probably remember it wasn't all that many years ago that we were all going to die of bird flu, and then we were going to have a nuclear war between Pakistan and India before that, and then we were going to have waves of global terrorism that would drive markets down indefinitely. People get emotional about these events, and I'm reasonably relaxed in terms of contagion coming from the U.S. and spreading over into other markets. But there's no doubt we are seeing a period of some slowing in global GDP growth, but not all that much in the Asian regions, and I don't think we will see all that much. The U.S. remains the high risk economy in here among the majors for all the reasons that you're reading about in the press. Okay, moving on to longer term themes. Well, again, it's going to be Asia. I feel very comfortable parking most of my equity capital in the Asian markets. And that doesn't mean that there won't be plenty of great opportunities in other emerging markets, but I am very comfortable being overweight in Asia overall. And I can sleep at night with that overweight in Asia. And as far as I'm concerned, the king and queen of Asian emerging markets are China and India, but the whole region is really very solid, I think, now and going forward for decades, probably. I also think the resources story, you've heard this for such a long time, but I think it's still very, very true. Just look at the strength of these industrial metal markets that we're seeing right now. Needless to say, this is not reflected in the share prices for from mining companies, but that will certainly change as investor confidence picks up once again, and all those ranging patterns that you see in a lot of the miners will be able to support, I think, quite substantial additional gains. So I am happy to have a chunk of my investment capital in that area, although it is underperforming in here. Or it has been underperforming for a while. Okay, government bonds. Don't like the sector. I only see that as a haven when people are worried about downdrafts in global stock markets. Basically, there are just too many bonds out there, and there's too much inflation in the pipeline. So I maintain that the global secular bull market for government bonds ended back in June 2003. You can see that on the charts. And that since the secular bull market ended, we are by definition then in a gradually unfolding secular bear market where we will see these sort of rolling waves, very gradual at still, but bringing upward pressure on those long-dated government bond yields. And when we next get a real surge in government bond yields, the risk of a bear market will be really quite high. That is not the case now, and it is not going to be the case while people are really worrying about the extent of slowdown and the extent of the dip in corporate profits that is taking place in stock markets. Incidentally, people have been talking for some time about mean reversion and corporate profits as well. See the rather good piece from Mike Leenhoff in Bruin Dolphin that I've posted today. What counts, of course, is expectations regarding those profits, not just the actual level or percentage of gain that we see. Okay, looking at the U.S. dollar. I've said it for years that we are living in an environment of intense competitive pressures from globalization. Now, that's good for global GDP growth, it's good for the consumer. But the competition, as you know, is very, very intense. And against that background, No country, and I really do mean that, no country wants a strong currency. But the fact is that some countries want and need a weaker currency more than some other countries. Now, the U.S. wants a soft currency. They don't want the currency in free fall, and they can't go running around saying they want a soft currency, because then that might actually trigger a free fall, but which would be destabilizing. But they want a soft currency, and more importantly, they need a soft currency. So if the U.S. Monetary authorities are worrying about the subprime loan collapse and possible contagion spreading into other categories of loans and spreading out into consumer spending and reducing confidence in general in the U.S. economy and increasing the recession risk, well, you bet they don't want, against that background, a stronger dollar. And so they'll print more of the stuff, and they will hold off on further interest rate hikes. And we've also got the psychology changing in here, because when the guessing game a few months ago was when would the U.S. next raise rates, now that consensus has swung very strongly to no, they're not going to raise rates, and they will probably cut rates. As I've said before, the Fed would like to do absolutely nothing, but if it's going to blink in here at any time in the next few months, it'll blink on the side of cutting rates if it feels that contagion from the subprime business is spreading. So that is an environment that favors a soft dollar, and that is what we're seeing, with the dollar taking another downward step within its broad-ranging pattern. And so I see that U.S. dollar index working its way back down to its historic lows of the 1990s, and that's in the 80 to 78 range on the U.S. dollar index. That's against 83.23 here today. So I see that happening. I don't see any collapse. Now, the yen, we've had lots of talk about the carry trade being unwound. We do know that a big portion of the yen's overall weakness, there are plenty of yen about. The Bank of Japan has seen to that over a number of years. And we also know that a number of Japanese investors, particularly of retirement age, have shipped money overseas because the yen has been generally weak, and they've been able to get much higher returns from overseas markets. So that's a big factor, and nobody knows exactly how large the carry trade is. My guess is that it's fairly substantial, but we just don't know. It's impossible to get any numbers on that. Only individuals or individual firms that are actually using the carry trade are going to know the extent to which they're using it, but they're not going to know facts and figures in terms of anybody else in here. But there's a more important theme here, and I've mentioned it before, but it's worth repeating, and that is following the Endaka problems. Remember, that was the word the Japanese created to describe living with a strong yen. There is a generation of economic and monetary policy officials in Japan who were so seared by that experience during the 1990s that the last thing they want is a repeat of strong yen. So they will keep plenty of yen available, and they will hold off on the interest rates. And interest rates remain the genuine hard fundamental here for investors. So interest rate differentials, that is. So we will get periodic rallies in the yen, but we are not going to see an appreciating yen. Interest rate differentials don't argue for it, and we also can be reasonably confident that the Japanese won't let that happen either. And a country can keep its currency soft if it wants to. Again, you just print more of the stuff, and you make it unattractive for people to hold it, and by keeping the interest rates low. Okay, moving on to the industrial metals. So many people still think this is highly cyclical. For several years now, you've heard that supply was going to catch up and swamp demand. It hasn't happened. For several years, you've heard from a number of quarters of the Fortunately Not Fuller Money on either of these points. You've heard people saying that China was going to have a, well, people were used to forecast a hard landing. You go back 2 or 3 years ago, there are articles posted on this site where people were saying that China was going to experience a hard landing. I post them because I like to post both sides of the view and disagreed all along. And I disagree today. I think China's economy will remain right up there with the at the forefront of global leadership and along with India's. And I also think that the demand for these industrial metals will just run and run and run and run, that this is the commodity super cycle, and what you see is what you're going to get. Now, that doesn't mean that there won't be plenty of volatility from time to time, but the big surprises in a secular bull market are always going to be on the upside, and that's the case so far. And I would say I've been about as bullish as it's possible to be of these industrial metals with while still keeping both feet on the ground, and I am surprised. I am surprised at how strong they have actually been. I mean, this nickel move is just mind-boggling. Now, again, I repeat that the sector will be volatile, but these are going to stay higher for longer. And that makes these top-class mining shares been awfully dull for a while, which is good accumulation time. And I agree with Donald Cox. These are collector's items and will be collected. They will disappear. They will be hoovered up by other firms. Okay, what else to mention here? Soft gold and the other precious metals. Let me take them before the soft commodities. Now, we are seeing something different this time relative to what occurred back in May and June 2006. Back then, as you know, precious metals were more overextended on the upside, and so they fell dramatically, falling more than the stock markets, and they stayed down longer in this very lengthy ranging support building phase. And they were just sort of really beginning to get decent rallies underway, although nothing like what they had seen in April and May 2006. But they were getting those rallies underway, and then they got caught with the contagion from the stock market correction. But they have held up better recently. Partly because they weren't so overextended, partly because there is a lot of underlying support on the charts, and partly because I think investor interest in this sector is growing, and there's been no diminution in the industrial and jewelry demand for this sector. So, whereas following the May-June correction in 2006, stock markets made all the running on the upside, and precious metals were wallflowers for most of that period, this time it may well be the other way around, or at least precious metals will match the gains we see in stock markets. That would be my guess. If they don't lead, they'll at least match. So we'll get a better relative performance from precious metals, particularly once we get that bottom in on stock markets, and we're not quite there yet. Another factor contributing that will be the overall softness of the US dollar, and I suspect it'll also be a pickup in global GDP growth. Now, looking at the crude oil market, this is soft here generally. That's good for the global economy overall, except for oil producers, and oil producers are not doing that badly. It is taking some of the inflationary heat off, and that's important because you certainly see inflation in other areas, not least in services. Now, and or in most areas actually outside of manufacturing, and the costs for manufacturers are building up. Again, look at these industrial metal prices, and you could really say this about most industrial commodities, with oil lagging here by quite a wide margin. So crude oil, that's very much the lagging story here in the industrial commodities, and the best energy story by far, as I've said all along, is the uranium story, and I don't see that changing here anytime soon. And last but not least, soft commodities. These are pregnant with potential. The global supply-demand balance is, well, it's finally balanced here after years and years and years of massive surpluses. It's now much more finely balanced, and in other words, we just don't have those big stockpiles. Adverse weather conditions, anything that really affects the supply side, which is always the key variable, will lead to price spikes. The chart patterns suggest this. The rundown of stockpiles suggests this. And it will take bumper crops to prevent it. And we'll see some good crops, no doubt. But I wouldn't bet on bumper crops all around. Well, that's it, folks, for another week. It's been exciting. And, well, when I look at my account, not as bad as I'd feared it might. And that's good news. So have a splendid weekend. That's exactly what I intend to do myself. All the best to all of you.